Blog Talk Radio.
Look homeward, angel. Tell me what you see. Do the folks I used to know remember me? Look homeward, angel. Find my lady fair. Does she dream about the love we used to share? So she'll know how very much I miss her. Angel, while she's dreaming, won't you kiss her? Know, do her empty arms still yearn for me alone? So she'll know how very much I miss her. Angel, while she's dreaming, won't you kiss her?
Boys and girls, and welcome to the Spirit of America Party in the Spirit of America Party book.com. And we just figured we'd open up with a little Four Lads of music and a tribute to Africa. I happened to get up on, I Googled my own book, and there was one critic. So I figured I couldn't let his criticisms go unchallenged. And I'll give you his version of what he didn't like about the book and my response. So when you look at his review, he calls himself Ajax the Great. I call him Xlax the Tiny. And he responds, I respond to Tiny Ajax, who uses Mao a lot. And this guy is definitely a communist. And communism is a big thing in the United States today. 45 of the communist goals that were set forth by Karl Marx, 40 of them have been achieved in the United States. And I don't know if you heard our boy Glenn Beck reading you about the Communist Manifesto that was tried out in Rhode Island in 1935, and how they were going to quietly take over the government. Well, they've succeeded. And it's only a matter of time before we call each other comrade. So here's what the my critic said, my number one critic, Xlax the Tiny. All you have to do is go to O'Donnell's website, spiritofamericaparty.com, which existed for years before the book, and see for yourself. In fact, I'll spare you the trouble right here. In a nutshell, his book is basically an ultra-conservative rag. I love that. I'm an ultra-conservative. And I thought I was an American fundamentalist. Wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross, of course. Whose author has a real axe to grind on numerous issues such as drugs. And I respond to that paragraph by saying, hey comrade, you left out a jingoistic, but if my country is tis of thee, then jingo all the way. Wrap the flag around me, boys, and sing the battle hymn of the Republic and onward Christian soldiers. Better an axe to grind than a hammer and a sickle. And then he goes on to cite my first chapter, which I consider to be the greatest abomination and threat to American civilization. Drugs. To him, 80% to 90% of crime is drug-related. Actually, most of the crime is prohibition-related, much like during the 1920s with alcohol. He fails to distinguish between use and abuse and addiction. Junkies are vampires in his view. He also believes in the discredited junk science gateway theory too. And that first time cannabis users should get the death penalty. I was just being sarcastic. But he took it serious because he's a paranoid communist. The drug war was America's first defeat in his view, and it still is. Yet, we should continue fighting for a lost cause. You see, his answer is surrender. Surrender to drugs and die broke. If it was up to me tomorrow, I'd close all the rehab units. You would get 40 days in the desert with the Apaches, and the Apaches would give you a one-day head start. Do you know the Soviets used drugs that promote aggression and paranoia as part of war tactics? They do. I had a friend of mine who left the Soviet Union and escaped to the United States. And when he was in the Soviet Union, he refused to join the army. And you could say he was a draft dodger. But he didn't get a Jimmy Carter pardon. Instead, he got scopolamine treatments in a mental institution. And I said, how did you survive? He says, I did everything they told me to do. And I said, well, how about the others? He says, they died. How's that? And then he goes on to say, Xlax the Tiny, the 1950s, a supposedly a drug-free golden age of family values in his view. Never mind all the alcoholism, domestic violence, child abuse, unemployment, segregation, lack of civil rights, and Cold War paranoia of that era. Cold War paranoia? This guy has never been to the Katyn Forest in Poland, where 6,000 Polish officers were gunned down and buried in trenches by the Russians. He was never at the Warsaw Ghetto. He was never in Warsaw when the Russians on the outskirts of the city told the Polish underground to rise up and fight the Germans. And then they didn't come in until after the Germans had killed most of them. And then they came in and fought at the Germans. Communists are very clever. When they lose, they win. You think about that. When they lose, they win. Teen pregnancy reached an all-time high in 1957. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. And I think we have no records on teen pregnancy because of the pill today. You can flush the kid down the toilet without batting an eye. Street crime, while it skyrocketed from 1964 to 1961, then plummeted to current levels not much higher than the 50s, and while cannabis and psychedelics were relatively rare, the most popular drugs at the time, other than alcohol and tobacco, a whole generation smoked cigarettes. and won World War II, and did not waste a breath. A whole generation. Every time you see a picture of a World War II veteran, he's lean, mean, a fighting machine, and he's got a cigarette in his mouth. There were then legal amphetamines, barbiturates, and benzodiazepines, many of which were favorites of housewives and Elvis. Elvis is the enemy of the communist movement. Yeah. Yeah, hey, bird dog. Now, let me just tell you something. I grew up before burglar alarms. The burglar alarm people, there was only burglar alarms on banks. There were no gates. If you got rid of drugs tomorrow, you could throw all the gates into the Hudson River. You wouldn't need a gate. You wouldn't need a fenced window. You wouldn't need to have ATT call you to see if the guy is still raping you. How are you doing? How are you feeling? This house is protected by ADT. Isn't that great? Ask any cop what his job would be like without drugs. Ask any one apparent family. Ask Hugo Chavez why he bought two submarines. The 50s were as close to drug-free as you can get. Domestic violence is greater today. Just ask the Petersons. The communists who infiltrated the civil rights movement effort today are stronger than ever. Segregation was defeated by economic boycotts by the down-home front. It is easy to be white and say some of my best friends are black. Abortion is the highest form of child abuse. 55% divorce rate of those with papers. What is it? 80% of hookups? Cold War paranoia? Tell that to 10,000 German women and 10,000 Korean women raped by liberating Soviet troops. McCarthy was a saint and Bobby Kennedy worked for him, plus one gay guy. Weed whackers are a threat to freedom. Elvis fell to Johnny Jump Up pills, as does all porno would today. Almost every movie promotes weed and horse, that's heroin, drugs, and leads to divorce. Then he goes on to criticizing Democrats. The most evil party in America to him, the latest incarnation of communism, he loathes Clinton and accuses him of all kinds of serious crimes, but he ignores or glosses over the neo-conspiracy of the other side, Cheney, Halliburton, Enron. You know, I just came up to Garden State, and I'm looking at gas stations that are no more. Shell, Exxon, Mobil, Texaco. You know what's on the Garden State? Luke Oil, L-U-K Oil. That's a Russian company. Okay, now where did Exxon, Mobil, and Texaco go? You know where they went? They went out of business to avoid government takeover. They went out of business to avoid a government harassment taxes. They went out of business to avoid EPA harassment. And you want to know something? The day will come when Exxon, which every American holds shares of stock in their 401k in, will move to a Dubai and be the guests of Sheikh Maktoum with no taxes for 200 years. And thank you, Chuck Schumer. If you want to go after windfall profits tax, go after the porn industry. Or the government don't want to do that because they're getting ready to take that one over too. They already got gambling and narcotics. Unbelievable. President Pinocchio Pants made $137 million as a government employee. Did you recall his latest deal, under-the-table deal, where he introduced the government of Kazakhstan in an uranium deal, to a Canadian, a billionaire, who gave him a nice fat commission? How do you think he got that? He worked his way up the ladder? My biggest regret about Cheney is that he was not bird hunting with Chuck Schumer. Bush, the president that could do no wrong. And then he has an acronym, which I don't know what it means, ROTFLMAO. I recognize Mao, so it must have something communist attached to it. There is that coded Mao message again. Bush made mistakes, like not pardoning troops and border guards. I said, my cowboy only rides a bicycle, and I do condemn him for not getting an act of war. Bush was given the greatest mandate by the American people in the history of the United States. He could have stood up and taken the lash and brought us all along, and he didn't do it. He parlayed instead of filleted. Where is the American win? Obama bin Laden? Bush, come back. Now you got a president for a year, and he's right in the heart of Taliban country, that's Afghan and Pakistan, and he hasn't gotten a bin Laden. Every day, every minute of the day, you heard the communists say, when is Bush going to get bin Laden? This is the wrong war at the wrong time. The American Revolution was the wrong war at the wrong time. And you hear them crying all the time, when was Bush going to get bin Laden? But now Obama's been in office a year, and very shortly, within another week, the body count in Afghanistan, the KIAs, will surpass Bush's body count for 8 years. And they'll slip those bodies into Dover, Delaware, and the media will hush it up. But if a guy got a broken toenail in the war on terror under Bush, it was on page one of the New York Times for 5 days in a row. So, where are we? Iraq. He believes the war was and still is necessary because Saddam was behind 9-1-1. I never said Saddam was behind 9-1-1. I said that Saddam paid $25,000 for a dead Jew any day of the week, payable to a bank, a party boss in France. Okay? If you killed a Jew, you could claim a $25,000 reward payable by Saddam Hussein, and I believe he's paying it from the grave right now. And if you don't think that he was paying for dead Americans too, you got holes in your head. An assertion because Saddam was behind 9-1-1, an assertion with zero hard evidence. There is still one story that goes about a thousand Soviet truck and convoy moving equipment out of Iraq into Syria. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I learned yesterday from first-hand intelligence, which was there on the scene, that 80 to 160 tons of munitions were being blown up by the Army Corps of Engineers and detonation teams in Mosul, Iraq, about 5-10 miles south of Mosul. And they were being blown up every day. The munitions were laid out over 1 mile, and every day since this war began, those munitions are being blown up and are still being blown up. And when this guy left, there were 83 bunkers full that they hadn't even gotten to. Okay? You noted Chemical Ali used germ warfare on the Kurds in Halabja. We don't know. Saddam buried his sons in his son-in-laws in the desert. We don't know what's buried with them. They're still turning up bodies in the desert. The guy murdered, I think, over 350,000 people he considered to be a subversive. Men, women, and children. This guy was a walking weapons of mass destruction. And now he's gone, and a cowboy hanged him and gunned down his two sons. So the world is better off. And we must never forget the 4,500 who shed their blood to bring him to justice. We must never forget them. And the day that the first American bled on Iraqi soil was the day that we should have been committed 1,000% until the war was over. And we Americans are, they crave quick victories. They don't want to see a war last more than 4 years. And they don't have to. Any war that we start and finish should be finished in 4 years. And we're behind schedule. We've yet to go to Iran. He believes the lie about WMDs in Iraq. And by the way, Mohammed Baradei has been covering up for the Iranians because he is a Muslim and they are Muslims. There's no other reason. If those Iranians were Israelis trying to build a nuke, Mohammed Baradei would have been blowing all kinds of whistles and whistlers. Unbelievable. Mohammed Baradei. As soon as I heard, I said, who's the guy that's checking on the weapons inspections, replacing Hans Blinks? You don't think that Hans Blinks made some Clinton money, huh, in government service? Tell me how a president of the United States getting paid, what, $200,000 a year, makes $137 million. Tell me how a woman from Illinois can pick up her bags, go to Arkansas, pick up her bags, walk into New York, wipe her feet on the doormat, and say, I want to be a senator from New York. Bobby Kennedy shouldn't have been allowed to be a senator from New York. We got 12 million Americans in New York, and we can't come up with one candidate for the Senate? Who owns who? Is slavery really dead? Bush got 3 out of 4. Let me see what he says. He believes that the lie about WMDs in Iraq. He says we will be there for at least 10 more years. Funny how you don't see him or his kids serving over there. And I'll give you a quick answer. I got relatives over there that are serving. I just told you about this one guy. And you want to hear a story about this one guy? He's a contractor. And when they got to Iraq for the first time, he came out of Afghanistan. When he got to Iraq for the first time, he was working for a contracting company, and all the communists here were going after Blackwater and the one that Dick Cheney was affiliated with, Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root, and they were going after the contractors. The reason those contractors were there, it wasn't enough adequate military. He said when he saw the first military units showing up, they had canvas doors on their vehicles. We weren't ready. We're 500,000 men on demand right now. Right now. We can't even fight in Yemen. We don't have enough troops to go fight in Yemen. Wait till it gets real serious. And it can get real serious tomorrow. Funny how you don't see him or his kids are serving over there. Bush got 3 out of 4 Husseins. Saddam himself was a weapon of mass destruction. Here is the evidence. Not one bribe-taking weapons inspector could guarantee America's safety. You're going to trust Mohammed Baradei to guarantee your safety? The man should have recused himself. America was on the run the day of 9-1-1. Do you remember 9-1-1? Not a plane in the sky. The president was hiding in Nebraska. Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer were fighting over the last gas mask. No one could guarantee our safety. No one in the goddamn world could guarantee one American life. And you're going to tell me that Bush made the wrong call? You didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. We just suffered the biggest defeat in American military history. The Pentagon itself was attacked, and they didn't have one Stinger missile to bring that plane down before it hit the building. But everybody's got a chalkboard. We had to send our own inspectors. 4,500 Americans gave their lives. 100,000, my friend tells me it's closer to like 28,000, left body parts on Iraqi soil. But we have the best combat, and this is no lie. You know the day that you hit the beaches with trainees in live mortal combat, that at the end of that battle, the survivors are the most experienced troops in the world. And that's what we have right now. We have the most experienced troops in the world. We have the best combat-tested, experienced fighting force in the world. And that will save lives in future wars, which are inevitable. And I would gladly take the place of an 18-year-old American who will give up his life for me and you. My son served in the Marines, one brother in the Navy, one brother in the Army in Nam, and one in the National Guard. And I served in Germany during peacetime. Frank McLaughlin, who served with Patton, the winner of war, says, if we have to be in Iraq for 100 years, let it be. But that's a winner talking. Iran wants America to invade Iran as well. Yeah, just the coastal cities. Bandar Abbas, Abu Shair. I was in Dubai when the State Department was running a seminar. This had to be back in 93. Running a seminar in how to do business with the Iranians. And there was a blockade on. And the Commerce Department was running a seminar. I went to the Iranian embassy with a Kuwaiti partner. We walked in there, and I said to the guard on the outside of the embassy, who happens to be an Emirati, I said, if we don't come out, I said, you see my face? If we don't come out, call George Bush. And we went into that Iranian embassy. My Kuwaiti partner was shaking. He was shaking. That's how nervous he was. And the Iranians inside were shaking. They were looking at me. They were shaking. And one guy said, oh, maybe you can try advertising. And he gave us the name of a newspaper in Iran. And they let us out another door. It's a good thing I didn't tell that guy to call George Bush, huh? Okay, but you see, one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. Okay, so Iran, I say, if, oh yeah, and the blockade. No blockade works. No blockade works, okay? It might slow down the enemy, but it does not work. But that does not mean we shouldn't try it. But everybody went around us. America is the big sucker. America makes the rule and lives up to it. And all our allies say, yeah, we're going to do the same thing, and they go around your back. France was doing business with the Iranians. England was doing business with the Iranians. They were all doing business. Germany was doing business with the Iranians. By the way, those 83 bunkers in Iraq were all built by the Germans. Okay, that was another boycott. That was another boycott. Remember that? They boycotted Iraq, and then they took over the oil for food program, and they were shipping in Mirage fighter jets covered in an inch of wheat. Yeah. So blockades don't work. You know what works? Occupation. You want the truth? That's the truth. You want a blockade that's effective? You seize all the oil wells that belong to Iran in the Gulf, and then you seize the coastal cities. And then you foment a revolution. So just the coastal cities, I say. Bandar Abbas, Bushehr. See the CIA map. You can pay in bullets now or pay in nukes later, which is coming ahead of schedule. We were lied to by both parties, both administrations. They've all helped foster the nuclear warhead development of the Iranian government by failing to take the bull by the horns, okay? And so all they have done is, well, it's not going to happen on my watch, but let it happen on the other guy's watch, who can't put it on his arm because his arm is missing. So just the coastal cities, Bandar Abbas, Bushehr, see the CIA map. You can pay in bullets now or pay in nukes later, which is coming. Ahead of schedule. Our biggest failure was not media bombarding the Iranian people. We sat in Iraq for 8 years and we did not broadcast enough propaganda to overthrow those women pinching mullahs. And I saw a great movie about Afghanistan the other night, that the guy should be given he should be given the Pulitzer Prize, and a Grammy, and an Emmy, and an Oscar. The name of the movie is Osama. It's about an 11-year-old girl living under the Taliban, who are sick people. Sick people. Our biggest failure was not media bombarding the Iranian people to get rid of the mullahs and get drinking water instead of heavy water. How can a country rich in oil not have gasoline? They don't have one refinery. How can that be? How can you make your people live and starve and work for tuman? You know what a tuman is? 1,000 tuman is a nickel. How can you starve your people? I've seen Iranians in dhows coming to Kuwait after the war, coming up on the beaches, selling everything they had for cash. Poverty written all over their faces. Hard work written on their hands. So they can have big parades and everybody wears spats and they shout America, death to America? For what? Because we sympathize with 3 million Jews who they want to annihilate? Flag burning. It hates any member of Congress who voted against flag desecration amendment in 2001. Yes, I do. And so will you when you see their names and deeds. And you know what my version of flag burning is? You should be allowed to do it on a cold, rainy, windy day with a wet book of matches in front of a 6,000-man Marine sniper team. And naturally, the team goes first. So, gay rights. He says, this guy is rather homophobic. This is one of the typical labels that you buy when you get the Democrat label machine. You get racist labels, anti-Semite labels, homophobe labels. These come automatic. They're free with the machine. This guy is rather homophobic, he calls me. And I say it's impossible because I'm a lesbian. I love women. I like to hug and kiss them. You want to buy my Democrat label machine? Abortion, totally against it, compares it to the Holocaust. Funny how some pro-lifers support wars of aggression. What war of aggression? Name one war of aggression the United States ever participated in. You mean a war of self-defense? Today, fools actually believe we got to take the first nuclear hit before we retaliate. Yeah. And they'll be standing on the bodies of dead Americans saying we had it coming and why do they hate us? 9-1-1 was a lesson for us and we didn't learn it. And one day, as history repeats itself, the body count will be higher than 3,000. And I say the magic number is 1 million. Until 1 million Americans die in a sneak attack, this country is not going to wake up and fight back. And when they do wake up and fight back, they're not going to be able to build anything because they've sent all their industry to our enemies. Totally against it, compares it to the Holocaust. It's funny how some pro-lifers support wars of aggression and the death penalty. I'm in favor of the death penalty. I do not want to pay room and board for a guy who's committed a heinous crime. I'll tell you who should have gotten the death penalty and time in jail. The death penalty should have been given to the guy who murdered that little girl in Florida, who put her in a plastic bag with her doll and buried her alive. That guy should have been given express checkout. I don't care if he's sick, demented, uncontrollable. He should have been given express checkout. He should have been given a Soviet-style execution where they take you into a tile room and they stand you over a drain so the blood can go right through the sewer. And they shoot you in the back of the head. That's what that guy should have gotten. And the cops that didn't go into that 40-foot trailer should have all been given jail time. One of those cops should have resigned and busted that door down. That girl was in a closet alive. And three people in that trailer knew she was alive. And May, anybody who thinks that we got to rehab people like that, may they suffer the same fate as that little girl. So let's see. Abortion, totally against it. I never really understood that, and the Roman Catholic Church is against all three to boot. Let's go back to the days. Wait a minute. Let me just say something about the Roman Catholic Church. Jesus said, if thy eye offends thee, pluck it out. And he also said that anybody who corrupts the innocent should have a millstone tied around his neck and thrown into the sea. And when he was in the temple in Jerusalem, he made a whip and he beat the crap out of all of the senators. Yeah, so the Roman Catholic Church may not be doing its homework full force. Okay? Let's go back to the days of the back alley abortions. This is a typical communist argument. They tell you about the back alley abortions. But you know what they've done with back alley abortions? They've increased the number of them, and they've moved them to a front office where you're greeted by a staff. It's the same atrocity. It's just that now you can see through the windows. How progressive is it to move a child murder from a back alley to the front office? Wars of aggression, comrade, communism, crimes against innocent victims. I do not want to... If a guy drags a woman, he has the evidence, and by the grace of God, clotheslines break her fall, that guy should suffer the same fate. And only it should be a no-wash day. If a grocer who's trying to make ends meet is held up and shot 3 times in the chest for $11, and by the grace of God survives, the guy who shot him should be shot by the grocer 3 times and call it even. I do not want to pay room and board for a life robber. And I also believe defense lawyers who know their client is guilty should get the same sentence. Separation of church and state. As an ultra-conservative cafeteria Catholic, he's against that too. The Constitution be damned. Cafeteria Catholic? Is that the same as a metal warrior? Bella Premunt Hostilia. That's from the tune Tantum Ego at Benediction. Our foes close in from every side. One nation under God, not communist God. Thomas Jefferson made a quillo. It was supposed to be separation of church and snake. The environment is virtually silent on that. It's a non-issue. I say it's a non-issue. If you see a polar bear standing on 1 foot, it's not because the ice is hot. He's 68 years old and too old to be drafted himself. Ever notice how it's always the young who do all the dying, not those old enough to start the wars? He was in the military in 58 to 60 or something like that, stationed in Germany, so he did not get drafted for Vietnam. He has never been in an actual shooting war, but writes about Iraq like an armchair general. Perhaps if he gets his wish, we will attack Iran. World War III will break out and a draft will be necessary. Or maybe he just hates millennials, Generation Y, with a passion. He implies they are the worst generation in American history. Not true. Take a look at the boomer statistics when you get a chance. George Washington was too old to be drafted. Yes, the young do most of the dying, and communist mothers like Cindy Sheehan drag their bodies around for votes. Sir, I served 58 to 64. I pushed up my draft at 18 rather than wait till 26. I was drafted before Nam and served honorably in the reserves during Nam. Okay. In combat experience, I once held off 27 waiters at the Prince Heinrich in Germany while my men finished their beer. The draft is the binder that unites us all. No skin in the game and no rationale. Change that to Generation Y, W-H-Y. Their version of opening a business is clinics, rehab, and abortion. I see the boomer statistics in the crime section every night, and most of it is drug-related. Tiny Xlax, State College, Pennsylvania, is the typical brainwashed baby communist, the precise product of communist cucumber school, taught to debate losing. It will never win a war, and believes you can negotiate with colored divergent counter on his knees, steeped in pilot blood at the cockpit door. Sadly, he will be all that is left when the communists rewrite the history of America. However, I must say he read the book, and I truly appreciate his input. It reinforces everything I believe in. It convinces me how hard Americans will struggle to get their country back. If we do not use the ballot bullet in November and purge, that's a communist word, the flag burners, your children will spit on your grave. You've left them nothing but unpaid bills. And the vulnerability of a wide-open nation. Usually communists who believe in utopias end up facing a socialist firing squad. Just ask the 2 million German troops who never came home from the Gulag, or the 6,000 Polish officers massacred in the Katyn Forest. Even better,
Ask any Ukrainian what was Stalin's stimulus package. Tiny X-Lax did not mention my tribute to Nathan Hale. Now Communist Harvard graduates, quote, I regret I have but one lie to tell to my country. Oh, by the way, I'm coming out of the ultra-conservative closet. I'd no longer to silence the majority. A bartender, a more tea.
They say that falling in love is wonderful. It's wonderful.
Hi, you boys and girls, and welcome to the Spirit of America Party. And we have a book called The Spirit of America Party, and the cover says, Take Me to the Beach. And you should take it to the beach this year while you're making up your mind how many communists you got to get rid of to get your country back. And take it into the voting booth on November of 2010. I just came back from a wake. And I had my eyes opened. Like that theme song I played the other night, Open My Eyes, O Lord. A great woman passed away. I think she was about 84. They showed her picture when she was a young high school student. She was beautiful. And she was married and had one child and adopted a boy. And she was married to a husband of 25 years. And on the boy's first communion, the husband told the wife he was leaving her for another woman after 25 years of marriage. And she was totally shocked. And then she was left to raise the two children. And on a woman's salary, whatever she could earn. Okay, and she came from a time when husbands used to say, no wife of mine will ever work. So she had to get her act together real quick to raise her family. The woman is a saint, and I can tell you where she is not today. She is not working boiler number 3 with Ted Kennedy. This woman is... If cloud 9 is the best cloud in heaven, she's there. And guess what she spent all her spare time doing? Trying to save children. She was pro-life all the way. She was a conservative. She was a Catholic. And tomorrow she will be leaving church for the last time. But she's already in heaven. If there is a heaven, this woman is there. So God bless her. She has served Christ faithfully. And she's a great role model for anybody. And she suffered at the end of her life. She was bent over
couldn't stand up straight. She needed a walker, a wheelchair, suffered lots of pain. She was crucified more than once. So she has a lot in common with the Savior. And I'm sure right now she's not feeling any pain, thank God. And she's feeling only joy and happiness, and she's with all the people she loves. And that's the end of the trail story for that lady. It was an Irish wake. And usually at Irish wakes, nobody pays any attention to who's in the coffin. They are socializing. And I happened to be in that milieu. And I met a retiree from the U.S. military. And he's still a young man. And he works at a security service for a big drug company, a company so big they have a campus. And I asked him, I says, what happens if you get a disgruntled employee that comes on campus with a gun and wants to take out 100 fellow workers? And you know what he said? I said, do you have a weapon? He says, no. Now, this guy is proficient in any weapon that the U.S. military has. I'm not exaggerating. If it's a weapon, he knows how to use it. But on campus, he is unarmed. And he has to go hand-to-hand with a perpetrator. Or call the police. Just like 60,000 soldiers in Fort Hood, Texas, had to call the cops when Mohammed, the mad Muslim, and he wasn't mad because he was crazy, he was just mad because in the Quran it says jihad is a wonderful thing. And Mohammed, the mad Muslim, killed 13 people and wounded 30. Okay? And of course, the 13 that he killed, they're only going to get $125,000 each. Did you know that? This is the thing I learned tonight from talking to Cousin Billy. Cousin Billy was one of the first contractors in Iraq. You know how the left always attacks the contractors, like Blackwater? And Billy wasn't with Blackwater. He was with two American-sounding companies. But one of the interesting things he told me, he was one of the first guys into Iraq. His job was to protect the explosives and demolition people who were blowing up the ammunition dumps that were captured in the run-up to Baghdad. He told me there were 83 bunkers that were filled from bottom to top, that for miles you could see the ammunition that Saddam had. He was blowing up, are you ready for this? He was blowing up between 80 tons to 160 tons of ammunition a day. A day, every day, and it's still going on. This is what this pig, this weapons of mass destruction carrier did to his country. He starved his people and he bought arms from the Russians, the Chinese, the South Africans, and the Americans. A lot of American ammunition was being blown up, Cousin Billy tells me. But the thing that blew my mind was when Cousin Billy was in Iraq, he said that we weren't ready to do this war, and he feels that the Bush administration thought it was going to be another desert storm, and we didn't go in with enough troops. And he said that the first vehicles that arrived there had canvas doors. Okay? Now, this is a guy who knows. And he also told me that you'll never hear a military guy knock the situation, no matter how troubling it is. Okay? They just won't do it. So they suffer silently, like that woman who passed away this week. And he also told me because that he was one of the first contractors to arrive in country, and the reason that they needed all these contractors was they didn't have enough military troops to do the job. So that's the reason for all the contractors. And I hear people saying, like Mike Savage, oh yeah, they give all the contracts, no-bid contracts out. How would you like a no-bid contract, Mike, to go and blow up 80 tons of ammunition a day? How would you like that no-bid contract? How would you like that no-bid? By the way, Billy's job as a contractor was to protect the guys who were blowing up the ammunition. But he wasn't authorized to have a weapon. You ready for this? This is how wide open we are, even on the battlefield. He wasn't authorized to have a weapon. But he, and what was happening, the contractors were so hard up for help, they were stealing from one another. And a friend of his named Jerry, he didn't know him that well, but after a while you get to, you know, you get familiar with the guys you're working around. Jerry was offered $20,000 more to go with another contractor, and he invited Billy to come with him, and Billy turned him down. And Jerry, the next day, the very first day on the job, was the guy that you see hanging off the Fallujah Bridge. And the story goes that three vehicles came out of the compound. The first one got hit with a small arms fire and took off. The third one got hit with small arms fire and retreated back. And the one in the middle was the one that Jerry Z was in. And they covered it, the people in the street are covered with gasoline. And then somebody up on the roof fired an RPG, and the fiery tail of the RPG ignited the gasoline. And supposedly the contractors were dead before they were hung from the bridge. But that can't be verified. So when somebody starts talking about contractors and the big money that they're making, you just think about Jerry Z hanging off the bridge. He's just got a $20,000 raise. Hang in there.
At Bull of Og, as the sun was setting, or the bright meadows of Shelmalir, a rebel hand set the heather blazing and brought the neighbors from far and near. Then Father Murphy from Old Kilcormick spurred up the rocks with a warning cry. Arm, arm, he cried, for I've come to lead you, for Ireland's freedom we'll fight or die. He led us on against the coming soldiers, the cowardly yeomen we put to flight. 'Twas at the Harrah the boys of Wexford showed Bookie's regiment how men could fight. Look out for hirelings, King George of England. Search every kingdom that breeds a slave. our Father Murphy, from the county Wexford, sweeps o'er the land like a mighty wave. At Vinegar Hill, or the pleasant Slaney, our heroes vainly stood back to back. And the yeos at Tulla took Father Murphy and burned his body upon a rack. God grant you glory, brave Father Murphy, and open heaven to all your men. The cause that called you may call tomorrow in another fight for the green again.
That's an Irish tune called Father Murphy. Father Murphy was a peace-loving Irishman who told his parish to cooperate with the British, to lay down their arms, and embrace peace. And as a result, his parish was slaughtered and gunned down. And he turned rebel. And he led the remaining Irishmen who were still alive to fight the British, and they won a couple of battles, but eventually they lost at Bull of Oak. And as a punishment for Father Murphy for being an insurrectionist, the British put him in a barrel and poured a tar and pitch on his body and set his head on fire. In the song, they say they put his body upon the rack. But you see, Father Murphy didn't have time to be a pedophile priest. Father Murphy was fighting for the land that he loved and the people that he administered to. So just remember that the next time some communist bastard tells you that all Catholic priests are pedophiles, remember Father Murphy. Now back to Baghdad. So I'm talking to Cousin Billy, and I got a ton of questions. So, and I'm a pretty good interviewer. I ask one question, I listen for 10 minutes. And then I hope that I can remember everything, because I don't take notes. I can when I do a brain dump, I hope all the boards aren't full. One of the things that was of interest, do you remember the run-up to Baghdad? When they took the statue, they tore down the statue of Saddam Hussein. Do you remember the first vehicle, one of the first vehicles to get to that statue, and an American climbed out of an armored personnel carrier or a tank, and he had an American flag, and he climbed up on Saddam's statue, and he took the American flag and he rubbed it in Saddam's face. And all the liberals, even the news media that were witnessing it live, said, oh, that's not right. That's not right what he's doing. Do you know, I happen to follow that GI, and the media also followed him, and they followed him to a town in New Jersey where he got busted for being drunk. And they trumpeted that, you know. Here he is, and now he's drunk. You know? Unbelievable. But he'll always be my hero, because he did what was in his heart. And as my uncle used to say, just before he evaded getting married, faint heart never won fair lady. And so I pay a tribute to that GI who risked his life and earned the right to rub the flag in Saddam's face, who had never had weapons of mass destruction, but he was one himself. And right now, he's with Ted Kennedy shoveling coal in boiler number 3, along with Uday and Kusei. That's a big boiler they got down there, man. There's a lot of guys going to boiler number 3. Not like Cousin Dolly, who's on cloud 9 tonight. But anyway, so he mentioned, we were talking about that that the run up to Baghdad and the taking down of Saddam's statue. And I think he told me, because I'm doing everything from memory, that he was there and that it was staged, because there was nobody around that statue when they got there. And they trucked in Iraqis in deuce and a halfs to stage that, you know, taking down of the statue and beating Saddam's face with the shoes. And I could understand that, you know, everybody wants to make things right. But he also said something that was very interesting. I asked him how Rumsfeld was. I'm a fan of Rumsfeld. I believe Rumsfeld followed orders to the letter. I call him the Rumsfeld Marshal. He did what he was told. He did it as best as he could, to the best of his ability. And he was 73 years old, still serving his country. He had been a pilot, a trainer, years before. He had been a corporate executive years before. And I think he pitched 7 innings, and the relief pitcher got the credit for the game. So I asked him what he thought about Rumsfeld, and he felt that Rumsfeld was too cautious. He felt that Rumsfeld that the Rumsfeld and the Bush administration had a game plan, and they stuck to it, and they wouldn't deviate, and they didn't adjust. Now, you know, when you fire artillery, you never hit the target on the first round, and you have to adjust for effect. And he feels that the biggest mistake that Bush made was, one, they were undermanned. And two, I'll tell you the biggest mistake they made. They never got an act of war. They should have declared an act of war. But Bush was trying to go to war by accommodating the communist left. And you can't do that. First, you have to kill the communist left, and then you accommodate the conservatives. And that's how you do that. There's only two people in this country, communists and conservatives. There's no middle of the road. You can't be middle of the road. The Arab word for middle of the road is kaliwali. It means this and that. You can't be. Not in wartime. And that was. And the first mistake Bush made was he didn't appoint wartime consiglieres. Condoleezza Rice is a nice lady, but she is not a wartime consigliere. Okay? She should be doing piano concertos. We need somebody in there like Joe Pesci. That's what we need. And we needed an act of war. And we talked about 9-1-1, and he recommended a book, and I'm going to try and recall the name of the book. The Towers Looming. He says, Google it, and you'll be able to get it. The Towers Looming. Apparently, it's about 9-1-1 going back and going forward. You might find that very interesting. And, of course, don't forget my book, The Spirit of America Party. Take Me to the Beach. Chapter 1 is the biggest problem in America, drugs. It's the number one killer of American families and American business. And Chapter 2 is terrorism. And Chapter 3 is flag burners of record. And I list all of the senators and congressmen who voted to burn the flag. We've been getting our lumps for a long time. And when Bush won, it gave us a Desert Storm, a victory. America got its pride back for the first time. And that was a good feeling. Up until then, we had been licking our wounds from Vietnam that were inflicted upon us by Joan Baez, Jane Fonda, and everybody else who betrayed the American people, John Kerry included. Hanoi, John. And yet he got to become a president. I mean, almost got to become a president. And one day he'll be working Boylan number three. So the thing that he mentioned to me that was one of the biggest mistakes that that the Bush administration made under Brenner, that was his name, Brenner, is they took a 500,000 Iraqi troops and threw them out into the streets. Okay, because they didn't trust them to be in the new Iraqi army. And all you did was make a 500,000 enemies. And how many troops were we going to come in with to keep in check a 500,000 enemies? And he mentioned something that's very, very, very true. That these Iraqis, oh, by the way, those ammo dumps used to have fences around them, and the Iraqis tore the fences down to sell them. And they took roofs. They took the roofs down to sell them. And when he left, those 83 bunkers filled to the top with ammunition was still there, yet to be exploded. So that's going on to this very day. 80 to 160 tons of ammunition a day. No wonder these people had no food for oil. So, and my biggest complaint about the Bush administration is that they didn't run a second offensive against Iran. And I'm not talking about a military offensive. I'm talking about a propaganda offensive. We could have had the Iranian people begging for American freedom. Hang in there. He also mentioned that money talks. And you can buy loyalty with money. And that's a good lesson for us in Afghanistan, because I'm sure money talks real big in Afghanistan. We lamented the fact that our industrial base is gone. And all of the people who told us we were going to be a service community now takes phone calls from India. It is really sad. It is really sad. And he also mentioned that the suicide rate among returning troops is higher than it's ever been. And not only are they killing themselves, but they're killing their families too. And I said, what do you think the reason for that is? And he says, because we're stretched so thin. Never before have we used as many guard units and reserve units as we're doing today. Usually, guard and reserve units are called up as a last resort. So that goes back to my theory that we're 500,000 men short. And I pray the day comes when the draft comes back. I think every American should serve his country, and the ones who won't serve it should have to leave it. Sorry, pal. And I don't think you should elect anybody to office that doesn't have a DD-214. There'd be no Chuck Schumers. There'd be no Jerry Nadlers. There would be no Carlos the Jekyll Levins. There'd be no Debbie Stabenows. I would make it a prerequisite. You have to have a DD-214. You have to serve in your country, and not in the Peace Corps. Not like Chris Matthews Rafsanjani. And then get a Jimmy Carter pardon. We've watered down our military. We're putting all our faith in a handful of people to keep us safe. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to the country. It is time to bring the draft back. Let's cull the herd, boys. When I was in the service, and you came to this country from another country, as soon as you put your foot on the ground, you got a draft notice. I served with Germans, Hungarians, Salvadorians. I served with Irishmen, Englishmen. You came to the United States, Poles. You came to the United States. Welcome to the United States. Here's your draft notice. Come serve your country. And I'm not opposed to, say, do 2 years and becoming a full-fledged American citizen. I'm for that. And now comes the saddest part of my discovery tonight. I asked my friend what the combat death benefit is for troopers. And I was shocked to learn. I always knew it was peanuts, but I was shocked to learn that it used to be $50,000, and that it's now $125,000. And if I'm wrong about that, I hope you let me know, because I like exact figures. I like true figures. I said, what about loss of limb if a guy loses a leg? He said, well, I've got a small wound, and I get 20% of my retirement pay as a benefit. And he figures, he's not sure, but he figures that if a guy loses a leg, or an arm, he may get 50%. And his retirement benefit was $1,500 a month. Does that sound like we're taking care of our troops? And he said, he happened to mention, and you know there's 2 million foreclosures in the United States right now. And he says, it's not right that a guy has to go and serve his country overseas and come back and lose his home. And I tell you what my theory is on that. It's time to smack the banks. And it's not only the banks' fault, the politicians. You got to get rid of these politicians. They're going to kill us. They're going to drive us into poverty. You see them all jumping ship now? You know why they're jumping ship? Because they see the handwriting on the wall. They know they've created a disaster. And they don't want to be in office when the lynch mob shows up at their office. We're on the precipice of losing everything. And nobody can predict, because with a false economy, you don't know how high it's going to go before it crashes. We could have a Dow Jones Industrial Average of 20,000 next year. Or we could also have one or 200. We could be the first. We could be not the first nation, but a nation that's gets a bad credit rating from Moody's. We're in trouble. We're not like Bush's mistake, not adjusting to the situation. We're not adjusting to the situation. We are not creating new ways to solve problems. Why do we have to have a 30-year mortgage? How come we can't help people pay off their homes in 7 years? Why does somebody have to pay twice the value of a house to a bank over a 30-year period? Why can't we make it affordable? Why can't we give the owner of the house who's making the payments more equity up front? How can banks borrow from the Federal Reserve at 0% interest and turn around and charge a guy that's struggling to get out from under 29.9% on the credit card that he needs to buy food next week? What are we doing to ourselves? Why are we allowing this to happen? Why? Because you pay your credit cards on time, let the other guy suffer and die? Is that the American way? Is that what George Washington wanted for us? Is that what Tommy Jefferson wanted for us? Is that what Secretary Seward wanted for us when he bought Alaska for $7 million? When Tommy Jefferson bought the Louisiana for, what was it? I forget. $3 million, and he kited a check to the French. And does anybody ever say thanks to Louis the 16th? Does anybody ever toast Louis the 16th, who broke his own country to keep America afloat? Nah, you never hear anybody singing Louis the 16th's praises. No, they all tell you about Marie Antoinette and let them eat cake. But Louis sent a fleet of ships to block the British access to Yorktown. that gave us our independence. God bless Louis the 16th. Unfortunately for the French, when they had their revolution, they killed all the wrong people. But going back to our GIs, okay, so the combat death benefit is appalling. It should be $2 million. Do you know if a dog gets run over by a taxi in New York, Chuck Schumer can get that dog $5 million? You think about that. We are not doing our military justice. They're not even mercenary status. Mercenaries make more. It is terrible. It's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. And they should be first in line. You want affirmative action? I'll give you affirmative action. You got a DD-214, you got a job. You got a job. And I'll tell you something. We need less government jobs, and we need more entrepreneurs. We got to get our industrial base back. Screw the Chinese. We need to have mom and pop in Gloversville, New York, get up in the morning and go to a huge factory and turn on the switch and produce something. And those profits pay for mom and pop. And we should have mom and pop factories all over this country. You know, when this nuke war starts, and there will be a nuclear war, as sure as the Chinese made gunpowder, there will be a nuclear war. It's inevitable. The size of the weapon doesn't change the heart of man. Okay? And I hope we're going back to rebuilding the neutron bomb again, because the only thing that deters terrorists is more terror. When terrorism becomes a losing proposition for the terrorist, you won't have terrorism anymore. But if you're going to coddle them and read them as merengue warning, we're all going to be burying our children. And it isn't. And they do have an economic goal. Their goal is to break us. Jihad, taxes on oil, taking down American Airlines, taking down Pan Am, taking down TWA. Every move they make is to hurt the American economy, whether it's the price of oil or it's hijacking planes and putting the airline industry out of business. With the help of the U.S. government. Tell me why the U.S. government should benefit from fining an airline company because you're sitting on the tarmac for over 3 hours. Where is the benefit for you? The U.S. government is lining its pockets with another form of taxation, and they're saying, we got you justice? Where is your justice? You didn't get justice. You got screwed. Guess what? When the airline company pays that fine to the U.S. government, the price of your seat just doubled. So you're getting tagged twice. Going back to the benefits for the GIs, going back to the condition for the military. We need a bigger military. We need a stronger military. We need a more ready military. And we got to put people in charge. We got to get rid of the JAG lawyers and get more of frontline troops. You know, Tommy Frank couldn't make a move in Afghanistan without, in Iraq, without the approval of a woman, a JAG lawyer. She gave him go and no-go instructions. He had to run this scenario by him. Oh, and that was something else my friend mentioned. He says they now have a 52-hour law. If you're holding a suspected terrorist, you have to release him after 52 hours. I think it's 52. I might be wrong. Might be 56. You have to release him after 52 or 56 hours if you don't have enough evidence to convict him. How's that? We're rotating them. 900,000 Al-Qaeda have graduated from Kilda Crusader Camp. kill the Jew camp. And I told you, time and time again, Osama bin Laden says all American taxpayers are Jews. Those are his words, those aren't mine. And when he teaches jihad, that sacred call, when he teaches jihad, he reminds all his people that the United States is an illusion of power, a giant warship that will not see the dinghy that sinks it. And you know where the dinghies are? They're in the House and the Senate. And you got to get rid of all the dinghies. You got to get, we need fresh crooks in the House and the Senate. The only lobby should be in a hotel. Get rid of them all. Close the latrine. Get fresh crooks. Don't settle for the lesser of two evils. And I hear Savage tonight saying that the Republicans are trying to hijack the Tea Party movement. No, they won't, Mike. The Tea Party is smarter than that. And you're right, Mike, about Orrin Hatch. He's no match for Heinrich Schumer. Orrin Hatch walks into the lion's den and says, "Hey, guys, what's for supper?" Yeah. We don't need Orrin Hatches. And the guy you mentioned, I'm trying to think of his name, wears the glasses. He was a lawyer for the ACLU, and he's passing himself off as a conservative. You're right, Mike, he's no conservative. And I can't remember his name, but his face is like Quasimodo. It rings a bell. I can't remember his name. So, let me give you a tune while I gather my thoughts. And we'll do some more one-sided conversation. Speaking of conversation, I am pleased to announce that Mike Gallagher now has an evening show on 970 AM. I love Mike Gallagher. I don't like the way he was knocked off the air. There was no warning. Oh, that's another thing. There was no warning. Today, it's very cold and callous when you lose your job. Big companies have other companies that they use to fire employees because they can't face them either. And one of the sad security jobs that my friend Billy has is... he has to accompany an employee who was told over the intercom he's fired. And Billy is a very gentle guy, and when he has to walk somebody off the premises, he gives them a lot of room. He doesn't crowd them. He lays back. "I'll escort you, sir." You know, he's a real gentleman. And he feels for the guy who's losing his job. He says it's very sad sometimes because a lot of these people are six-figure people. And all of a sudden they've been told their project has been canceled and to get their things and get out. And that's the goodbye speech. Me, as a small businessman, I never did that. When I let somebody down, they didn't even know they hit the ground. I put them down so gentle that I was told time and time again, I'm a great boss. And sometimes I cried more than they did. But I treat every person as if they're a loaded gun. And there'll be nobody flying planes into my office building. Unbelievable, right? So, and the saddest part, Billy says, is that sometimes women will go into the bathroom and lock themselves in and cry hysterically. And this is not the America that was on the rise. This is not the America that led the way. This is not the America that invented everything that the rest of the world enjoyed. This is dog-eat-dog America. This is too many lawyers taking a piece of the action. This is too many judges deciding in favor of too many lawyers. This is bad news, America, and we got to change the face of it. And then the heart, and then the soul. We got to stop. We got to start being Americans again. We got to look out for each other. Right now, we're doing unto others before they do unto us. And it's no way to fly. I mean, look at the state. Even the mafia is turning against each other. Even the mafia is squealing on each other. How things have changed. How sad. Whistleblowers get commissions. Wait till the whistleblowers are turning you in for having a shortwave radio. A communist takeover of the United States? I got news for you, buddy. It's already here. Just look at the change in the generations. We got a whole generation that doesn't even know it's brainwashed. How successful the communists have been. If you get the 45 communist goals from their own manifesto, you will see that they've accomplished 40 of them in the United States. The only one of the few that they haven't got managed to succeed in, though they're working on it through the pedophile priest situation and the gay ministers who are committing adultery, abandoning their wives and children to marry another guy and getting to become a bishop. Yeah, tell me about that one. Tell me how Jesus would square that one away. Yes. Oh, boiler number 3 is going to have a lot of coal. So, yeah, they haven't managed to destroy religion. Because religion is really the opiate of the masses. Going to mass. And it's a heavenly opiate. If you never had a spiritual orgasm, you don't know what you're missing. There is such a thing. It's like you made a phone call and you've always gotten a busy signal, and one day you get through and there's a pleasant voice on the other end. That's when you know you're home. And if there is no God, it won't matter, because you'll just go into the ground and be worm food. But if there is a God, won't you be glad to see him instead of Ted Kennedy on boiler number 3? I dedicate at this next tune to Lady Dolly, whose wake I was at tonight. And I was privileged to know her. And she has affected many lives, including mine.
I have dreamed that your arms are lovely, and I have dreamed what a joy you'll be. I have dreamed every word you whisper. When you're close to me, how you look in the glow of evening. I have dreamed and enjoyed of you in these dreams. I've loved you so that by now I think I know what it's like to be loved by you. I will love being loved by you. it's like to be loved by you.
Close the show tonight with a Tiger Woods report. That's what everybody's going. They're going Lady Gaga.